And that's why it's so unfair, because that's the tightrope that women walk. We know we've got to be assertive and tough and confident, but you don't want to be too assertive because you'll be called bossy. And you don't want to be too tough because then you'll be called a bitch.
Welcome to Don't Fucking Tell Me What to Wear or How to Run My Business. This is the Woo Pod.
In over 30 years of working, I've never once heard a man called either bossy or a bitch. In fact, the kind of things that would get you labelled that as a woman, I got celebrated for.
I'm your host, Wendy Gannon, but most people call me Woo. I'm a photographer, ADHDer, female advocate, and let's be honest, an all-round fucking legend. Can you tell I didn't write this script? This podcast is part of Female 5 Million, a movement founded to empower women to step the fuck up, take control, and unapologetically own their space. It all started with some fucking Jebben's LinkedIn post spouting some sexist bullshit about how women should dress to succeed in business. And you know what? Stuff like that really fucks me off. It really fucks me off. So I posted about it, and that post ignited something bigger. A nationwide photography project, a full-blown fucking movement, and now this podcast. Here on the Woo Pod, we're raising the voices of women who refuse to be told what to do. Women who are done playing by the rules and are now saying, don't fucking tell me what to wear or how to run my business. If you've ever been told to tone it down, dress more appropriately, or run your business like a man, fuck that. Expect raw, unfiltered conversations with women who have fought through sexism, abuse, and outdated patriarchal bullshit to build success on their terms, all whilst wearing whatever the fuck they want. Oh, and there's more swearing than our producer is willing to beep out. Sorry, Buckers. Speaking of which, you'll probably hear me ask producer Buckers to chime in from time to time because, like, I give a shit what she says. We've both got ADHD. We bounce well off each other. Deal with it. We're here to celebrate women doing business their way and shine a spotlight on the incredible ways women are fighting back and lifting each other up. Because to be honest, that's what it's all about. And for those who aren't able to speak up right now, for whatever reason, I see you. Okay, let's crack on then. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Don't Fucking Tell Me What to Wear or How to Run My Business podcast, part of the Woo Pod. I've got, obviously, producer Buckers here with me. But today we've got the absolute legend that is Jeremy Stockdale. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
Can you tell us about all about yourself, Jeremy? What do you do?
Yes. So I run a company called Wirelead. I set it up during a pandemic. In 2020, but prior to that, I'd worked for a big organisation for 27 years, and the company Wirelead is about leadership and why people should lead. Because I was a classic accidental manager in my career. I suddenly got to a position in the organisation. They gave me a whole bunch of people. I didn't know what to do with them, and after about a couple of years of really being not very good at it, I started to kind of have a bit better impact. And when I did, I found that incredibly rewarding. And I almost had this epiphany and said, oh my God, this is what I want to do. This is such a privilege to lead people, and I want that responsibility. So for the last 15 years of my career, I led large teams across the UK and Africa. And I left partly because 27 years was long enough. I was nudging 50.
And thought, no, you ain't.
Yeah, stop it. And I thought, I don't want this to be my life, you know. I thought there's more I could do. So I set up Wirelead to help other leaders lead with purpose and compassion, and started trading in 2021. My work is now still focused on leadership, but I spend an awful lot of time in the kind of the gender space as well. And that comes back from kind of, you know, I started to educate myself. Again, a little bit by accident. And I just thought, oh my God, I spent 51 years as a man just not knowing these things.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. Leadership, inclusive leadership, but with a particular focus and a passion around gender.
Amazing. Thank you. And thank you. So let's talk about a little bit about what you do to support women.
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I think to say, oh, I do this and I do that could sound very performative. I think I'll probably go back a little bit to say, because I used to think in my corporate career, I used to think I was one of the good guys.
Yeah.
Because I sponsored and mentored women. I got a good gender balance in my team. I could see there were some differences and some ways that women showed up differently from men. Didn't quite understand why. I just noticed that's what it was. And I did what I could to change that. And I got involved in female talent programs, all of those kind of things. But about nearly 4 years ago now, something happened that just kind of made me realize that I just hadn't done enough because I just didn't know enough. And it was like, oh my God, I didn't know. I did not know. So what I've been doing over the last 4 years is primarily educating myself to understand things. So I've read lots, I've watched lots, and I've spoken to hundreds of women. So I sleep they're stupid, basically.
Yep.
And I think what that enables me to do is to show up in a different way, to be more mindful of the way I behave, the things I say. And I'm now at a point where what I'm trying to do is to advocate for different things. But I think you have to do the work on yourself first.
Yeah.
And then you can start to actually take some different action to move forward and then get to a point where what I'm trying to do now is advocate for equality of opportunity for women and for non-binary people. And so basically people that don't necessarily have the sheer weight of privilege that I recognise I have.
Amazing. I've got a couple of questions. What was the thing that happened?
Yeah. It was like a teaser campaign, wasn't it?
What was the thing that happened?
Yeah. So it was when, it's back in 2021, when Sarah Everard was abducted, raped and murdered by a serving police officer. I think most people were struck by just the, not that that event wasn't unusual, but the fact it was a police officer. I think what I noticed with it was, I mean, obviously, like most people, I was horrified by what happened, but it was just the reaction of women that struck me. Just the anger and frustration that we can never be safe. I mean, Sarah was doing everything that women know they should do, shouldn't have to keep themselves safe. She's walking home along a well-lit street. She was on the phone. She had her keys in her hand, all the things you're supposed to do, and she still wasn't safe. And so I was really struck by not only the reaction, but then how the women were treated in the media and by the police, the people designed to protect them, punish them again when they did the vigil. And I spoke to quite a few women at the time. And one I spoke to, I said, well, what can I do to be a better male ally? How can I show up in a different way? And she said, read two books. And the two books were Everyday Sexism by Laura Bates and Invisible Women by Caroline Credo Perez. And I read them both and they just blew my mind. I thought, I had no idea. I just didn't know. I know sexism exists. And I know that there are parts of the world that, you know, things that are designed by men for men, but the sheer scale of that, what women and girls have to go through every day just to keep themselves safe, just that doesn't even cross my mind. I don't have to think about those things. I just had no idea. And so one of the stats that Caroline shared, which I often share when I talk to people because it's extraordinary that it was true, but it's still true, is that women are 47% more likely to suffer a serious injury in a road traffic accident. Which is in cars today, still are designed around the male body.
They have just, they have not long started using female crash test dummies, but only in the passenger seat.
Yes, because do women drive now?
I think some of them do.
Wow.
Joe Phillips's talk that she does, and that's where I learnt that.
Yeah.
Stat. Joe right. Phillips's talk that she does is the most amazing talk that I've ever seen in my life. I'm not going to ruin it, but the first thing she's like, right, everybody take a selfie. Pat your hand up and take a selfie. How many men struggled with that? How many women struggled with that? Because phones are made for men. This is made for men. That's made for men. The things that are made for men without women in mind, like a bulletproof vest in the police force, is not made with women and their breasts in mind. The most ridiculous one,
right,
is HRT or the pill are not tested on females. They're tested on males because their hormones change too much to get a reading, basically.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I know.
The medication that we take to stop being impregnated by a penis, or to stop having spots, or to get stop having a fucking backache.
Regulate periods, not have pain.
Yeah, all of it is just tested on men.
Wow. I didn't know that. The stab vest one I did know, because I met she was on a panel talking about the menopause, and she was about to retire as a detective inspector in the police force, and we got chatting after. She was amazing, so I hung around to fanboy and just, oh, you're brilliant, we have a chat. And she told me the stab vest thing, that, you know, they're now unisex. But I don't know if anyone's noticed, you may have done, but women's anatomies are quite different, aren't they?
Especially mine. Fucking massive. Yeah.
So it was things like that. I just thought, oh my God. So what happened with that is that it just made me more curious. I thought, maybe being at a stage in my life where I was sort of, I don't know, liberated from the shackles of a corporate career, I was discovering lots of different things. And so since then, I've read many, many more books, and I've spoken to hundreds of women. As I said before, I now sleep less stupid. I'm still learning all the time.
Of course.
But that was the thing for me. That was the catalyst, was that event, reading some stuff that then has now made me wildly curious about these things. But also, what's interesting, it's made me more curious about the world.
Yeah.
I'm just interested in different things now, far more than I ever was before, you know. So that was the catalyst. A tragic event, actually.
Absolutely tragic event. Second question I had out of that, being an ex-recruiter and having had a recruitment company, you said that you were doing all of these things on your corporate life to help and support women.
Yeah.
Do you think what you know now, there was anything else that you could have done?
Oh.
If there's a CEO, a male CEO listening, or a male manager, what could they do that isn't on their tick box list to help support women in the workplace?
There are so many things. But I'll give a couple that come to mind straight away. I think the easiest one in many ways, I think, is just to start to notice what goes on. Start to notice what happens around you. Because what you tend to do as a man in a very masculine environment, which most workplaces are, is you don't notice these things. You just kind of go through it. But just notice what happens. What's the dynamic in the room? Who's speaking? Who's getting interrupted? Who's dominating the conversation? And just start to observe things. That's one of the first things. And, you know, speak to women and ask them, and then listen. You know, it's an opportunity to kind of, you know, then provide your manly views. It's like genuinely show curiosity and how different people experience the workplace, and dig deep to find out what they really think. Take that information on board and then go out and observe it. That's one of the first things I'd say. But that takes time to do, but that would be an obvious one. A very practical thing that I only become to realise recently how important it is actually properly sponsoring women. So people often get confused with the term, you know, sponsoring, mentoring, coaching, whatever those different things are. But I've seen that you maybe have heard the phrase a few times, that women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. It's absolutely true, they are. I mean, the amount of women that I know that we provide mentors for women in the workplace as part of female talent programs, those kind of things. Women are often mentored, but are rarely sponsored.
What's the difference between a sponsor and a mentor then?
What a mentor does, it provides you with a place where you can get advice and guidance from typically from someone more experienced than you, or someone that knows more about the topic you're trying to explore. So you can have reverse mentoring as well, but typically mentoring is a more senior, experienced person who you can go to for advice and guidance in a safe environment. So that's what mentoring is. So it's kind of like an advisory thing, a support thing. Sponsoring is someone actually advocating for you. So it's, and that typically will happen when you're not in a room. It might be mm-hmm. in a room, but it's then a sponsor is someone that will invite you to a meeting to present to something and give you airtime and give you the opportunity and the space. It's
gotcha.
When you're in a meeting talking about talented people, you're advocating for that person because you know how brilliant they are. And so, and there's been quite a lot of research conducted into this. And I feel it's one of the biggest things organizations to do. Stop trying to fix women, stop doing mentoring. Actually get leaders understanding how to sponsor people and not just sponsor people that look like them.
Yeah.
What I realized through my career, you know, I kind of, you know, progressed relatively quickly in the first 10 years in my corporate career. And I look back now and realize that I got organic sponsorship all the time. And typically from older men, older white men, who would yep. see a little bit of themselves in me as a youngster, bright young thing, and they would help me progress. They would, and they would talk about me in meetings. Oh, he's a good lad, this one, and you know, we ought to give him. You know, that was happening for me, but it doesn't happen in the same way for women. It really doesn't. So I think sponsoring women and knowing how to do that, I think is a really practical thing that senior men can do.
Yeah. I did used to get sponsored as a woman, but I was a woman pretty much pretending to be a man.
Like, well, that's another fascinating thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but I'm not the most delicate flower. And I think I've always taken that, like, especially the humour thing, I think, is a protection. Like, yeah. From the trauma. Trauma makes us hilarious. Certainly made me yeah. hilarious. As a protection thing, like, I have got the worst, darkest, most disgusting humour. I can outdo anybody.
She does.
Like, as a challenge, we should get together and drink sometime and just see what happens.
Let's do it. So yeah, so I did get put forward for promotions and stuff yes. like that, but because I was bolshy and had the dark humour, and you know, they could see that I wasn't a little girl.
Yeah, so I think that's, for me, that's a really fascinating topic, because I'm trying to think about the best way of kind of tackling it, because it's quite a broad one. But the simple thing is that because most environments, workplace environments, are overtly masculine, everyone knows the rules of the game. Everyone knows in order to get on, you've got to be assertive, you've got to be tough, you've got to be confident, you've got to take up space, you've got to be logical, disciplined, all of those kind of things. We kind of also know that things like being vulnerable, compassionate and kind and intuitive are valuable, but you don't want to overplay them. Kind of, you exercise with caution, because you know that assertiveness is really important. So what I've seen happen is that in order for women in particular to progress in the workplace, they have to dial down some natural feminine traits and dial up some masculine ones. So which is neither authentic, and I think I also, from speaking to many of them, it's quite exhausting. So yeah. quite often, they will get to senior positions, they will get there, but they might get to a point in their sort of 40s, 50s, when they're at the peak of their powers, and they're just done. They burn out. In fact, ones that I've heard say, I can't do it anymore. What they go off and do, they go off and form their own organisations and help other women show up authentically and help them to be...
Yes, we do!
All really valuable and important, but what a loss... To the workplace. I also find it quite poignant, and that's what you have to do, because I even look back at my own career and think that even I kind of had ticked every single box of privilege, I still conformed in many, many ways that I don't anymore, and it's liberating when you don't have to. But it was so much easier for me just to be myself. And
yeah.
I also know that when I know a number of women that I know went on female talent programs a few years ago, 10, 15 years ago, they may have evolved since then, but I bet they haven't completely. And what you're taught, in order to get on, you have to be, you know, you have to take up more space. You've got to dress a certain way. You've got to project your voice in a certain way. You know, that, in other words, you've got to behave a bit like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the big things that Barclays used to talk about, who I work for, that all the time, what leaders need is gravitas. So first of all, what the fuck is gravitas?
What the fuck is gravitas?
Gravitas is
fine. Got to have a bit of psych about you.
Gumption.
Yeah, yeah. If you're with a deep voice, it's kind of easy to have gravitas. I had a friend of mine who was a peer who was absolutely brilliant, but she was 5 foot nothing, had quite a high-pitched voice, a regional accent. I said, how do I do gravitas then? And of course, the thing is, you don't do gravitas. What you do is you do you, because you're brilliant. But she was having to kind of adjust and conform and be something that she wasn't just to get to the next level.
But then she'll get told that she's got a little woman syndrome or a little lady syndrome or whatever it is because she's small and she's having to be... Bleh.
And that's why it's so unfair, because that's the tightrope that women walk when they
yeah.
So we know we've got to be assertive and tough and confident, but you don't want to be too assertive because it'll be called bossy.
Mm.
And you don't want to be too tough because then you'd be called a bitch. I mean, over 30 years of working, I've never once heard a man called either bossy or a bitch. In fact, the kind of things that would get you labelled that as a woman, I got celebrated for.
Yeah, get you promoted.
It's like the whore thing, right, isn't it? Like, if woman sleeps with lots of men, she's a slut. If men sleep with lots of women, they're a hero.
Yeah,
it's loud.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a bloody hero.
This reminds me of the America Ferrera speech in the Barbie movie.
I've got ADHD. I've seen it, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
Where she's kind of, oh, there's no way I'd even be able to do it justice. But it's just like a 5 minute, maybe even more, speech where she's talking to Barbie and she's like, she's calling out all of those really, like, the hypocrisy of women have got to be pretty, but not too pretty. And like all of, reminds me of what Jeremy was saying.
And I think the thing is, for me, again, I didn't experience any of this. So now I'm learning it. I can only begin to imagine without actually having experienced it. But It's the mental load. It must be exhausting in the same way that all the things that women have to do to just to keep themselves safe. You know, can I get in a lift with that man? Will I be safe walking down that street?
Yeah.
It's that just mental load that comes on top.
It's interesting though, because like, Jimmy, come here.
Jimmy is the epitome of the patriarchy, just shouting all over our conversation.
It's interesting, though, because I guess we automatically do those things, so it doesn't knacker us out as much, which also leads me on to toxic masculinity.
Mm. Yeah.
Because men are told that they need to be one way or another. You know, don't cry, don't show your emotions, you've got to be strong, you know, carry women's shopping, et cetera, et cetera. And we were talking about this before, I think that toxic masculinity has been understood wrong.
Yes.
Can you explain what toxic masculinity is and what it is not, Jeremy, for us?
Okay. So I'll be honest, one of those terms which I think had... initially had some meaning, but now it's just been hijacked, and I think it's not to use a term myself, it's just unhelpful. Toxic masculinity is, for me, is when masculinity is displayed in an unhelpful, an unsafe, inappropriate way. Now that can be displayed by all genders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just men that can show toxic masculinity. Masculinity isn't something that just men do. Masculinity is an energy alongside femininity. We all have both.
Yeah.
Varying degrees.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, when I started to realise that I had access to feminine energies and dial those up more consciously, it made me a much better leader, much better person. We all have access to them, but we are conditioned from a very early age to go down certain routes. It happens around about the age of 6 or 7. And that's when people start to kind of go down these very gendered routes due to, you know, the way we're socialised. So toxic masculinity for me is when people display masculinity in a way that is like to be harmful to other people. And it could be things like just... So a simple example is for me, of toxic masculinity, which is easily avoidable, is if you're a man... I mean, I'm a 6 foot man, I'm quite broad. So if I sit on if I sit on a train where the seats are often quite narrow and I spread my legs and I take up half of the next person's seat. For me, that would be toxic masculinity.
Why do men do that?
Because they want to take up... I disagree with this.
Is it more comfortable or something?
Well, I'm doing it now, but I think so, potentially. But the flip side of that is what now I'm aware of that and the fact I have a busy... If I'm sat next to a woman, I'm likely to have a bigger physical presence than her. So I can just take up that space and more than I'm entitled to. I can think, actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to share the space with her. And I will typically now just inch a little bit further away from the edge of my seat so that I know I'm not going to be encroaching upon her. So toxic masculinity, I think, is either you do that unconsciously, but particularly if you do it consciously, you kind of impose your space. My daughter used to do this hilarious thing where she would walk up to me and just sort of, you know, basically just sort of thrust her crotch in my face, and she would go up to me and go, "All right, Dad." She'd put her arms.
I love her.
Go like that.
I love her.
Manly noises, and it was so funny. But in a way, that kind of encapsulates it, because now, of course, there's really overt forms of toxic masculinity as well, which is things like catcalling, and it's, you know, and that's just sort of real misogyny. I think the problem with toxic masculinity is that the way it's been interpreted by many people in the media and a lot of people on the receiving end of it is that masculinity is toxic. And it's not.
See, I have got this. I completely disagree with all of that. I don't think that's toxic masculinity. I think toxic masculinity is against the men themselves. They feel that they have to be a certain way. Like toxic positivity. If you are too positive and you think of all this positive stuff, I used to have this, and don't allow yourself to feel the negative or feel sad or anything like that, it's fucking shit. Like a man, it's toxic masculinity that he feels that he can't cry, so he holds it in, and that is toxic to him. I think that what you've just described is something completely different, but because the words toxic and masculine are used, that's now been used against men.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think those are perhaps the best examples I'd use, and I completely agree with what you're saying. I think the whole point about, I mean, patriarchy we'll probably get onto, but toxic masculinity is damaging for society. It's damaging for men and for women. It shows up very strongly for women when men display their masculinity in a toxic way, as it does when women display it as well. It shows up negatively to people around them, but it also is harmful. It's really harmful to men. So things like not being able to show your emotions, not being able to admit when you're struggling, not being able to show vulnerability, that's damaging for those around you, but also for yourself, which, I mean, I certainly know that. So, no, I think you're right to kind of disagree with those examples. But I think the biggest thing I'd say about it is that I'm really comfortable with my masculinity.
Me too.
More so than I've ever had been before. Exactly. But I'm also really comfortable and embrace my femininity. And I think that the more people realise you can have both, you don't have to choose one according to the sex you were born with. You don't have to do that. You can have both and display them when it's appropriate.
Yeah, or just do whatever you bloody want. Like, you mentioned patriarchy. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
When we were talking, I was talking to a lot of people about Female 5 Million and the Don't Fucking Tell Me What to Wear or How to Run My Business project. And women were like, I really want to be involved in this, but fuck the patriarchy, as it did get coined by Lois, as she said. She sent the email out calling this the fuck the patriarchy issue. I was like, Lois, that's not what it's called. Women came back to that email and they're like, that doesn't align with my brand because I work with men.
Yeah.
And I was like, that patriarchy doesn't mean fuck men.
No.
Although as much as we like doing that, it doesn't mean like we hate men, get rid of them. Can you explain what the patriarchy is for everybody?
Yeah. So I don't know whether it's a helpful term or not. I'll come on to a second why I kind of write about it. But the patriarchy is a sort of a societal system, structures, norms and behaviours, the things that govern society that are overtly masculine that, it theoretically at least, might seem to favour men, but actually are damaging for society. They're things that limit us all, they constrain us, they stop us from making progress. That's what the patriarchy is. So it's a quite a nebulous concept for me.
Nebulous.
Yeah, good word, isn't it? The definition in the dictionary is something like the rule of the father. So it's where you have where men are most of positions of power and women are largely excluded from it. I don't think those definitions are particularly helpful, but for me, it's systems and structures that are limiting for people of all genders.
Yeah.
What it really is about, patriarchy to me, just to sum up, it's about power. It's about power structures. So you see that where the patriarchy operates, it's keeping the very, very tiny percentage of people, less than 1%, in power and keeping everyone else without that power. But what they do, what the patriarchy does very cleverly, is it gets us fighting against each other.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, even by using the word, it gets us fighting against each other.
Yes.
And how do you feel about the patriarchy, Jeremy? What do you do on a Wednesday, Jeremy?
Well, that's a good question. It's the middle of the week, and what I do is I smash it. So the backstory is that I write a post on a Wednesday that starts off the line every week on Wednesday to smash the patriarchy, and it started off because my daughter, who I mentioned earlier on, who I think spends as a lot of fun in taking.
What's her name?
Phoebe.
Hi, Phoebe.
Hi.
She has a T-shirt that says, on Wednesday, just smash the patriarchy. Had it for a few years, and she used to wear it around Bristol Uni, and, often was a bit of a talking point. So I persuaded her to let me take a little pic of her and write a post about it, do a little interview with her. The third question I asked was, why Wednesdays? And I loved her answer to that, which was, it's my quietest day. So she had this tea. I wrote about it, and it got a really nice reaction. So the following week, I thought I'd follow up and just write about, let's now look at how the patriarchy is damaging for women. And then the following week, I wrote about how it's damaging for men. And it just continued from there. I just carried on writing about it because of the reaction I got. So now it'll be 2 years I've been writing them in May. And I've learned so much from doing it. I mean, I learn every single week. Not everyone agrees with me. And that's absolutely fine. I actually want more people dissenting, more people challenging my views, because that helps me to learn. I've met some amazing people from doing it, and it's got quite a following. It's something that I just do every Wednesday. And because I fundamentally believe, because I started off really, because I've been on my sort of journey of thinking, oh my God, I didn't know I need to do more to help women. I've now realised how the patriarchy as a system, as a structure, is really damaging for men. I've reflected on how it's kind of and held me back throughout my life. And I'm now trying to unlearn certain things, as well as learn new things. But it holds people back. It really does. And I think you make a really good point earlier about how much it holds back men. I think we've really neglected men in a lot of this stuff. And it's not a zero-sum game. It's like, well, we know... there's loads of things we need to do to make things fairer and create equal opportunities for women and non-binary people and all kinds of people from sort of marginalized groups. But it's not at the expense of men.
No.
Yes.
No, it's not at the expense of men. I might get some hate for this, but...
Go for it.
Like, men are getting quite a lot of shit at the moment. Like... I understand that we've had a lot of shit forever. Women have had shit forever. Yeah. But men, I feel... I think this is going to be really... Like, people are going to hate this. Like, no, I'm not going to say it. I'm too scared.
Well, okay, I'll say it for you. So I completely agree. What I've realised is that men are suffering too. And you can have that conversation. You can absolutely highlight those things. It doesn't take space away from women any more than when I kind of write a post about something that women experience and then someone comes on and says, well, what about men? It's like, well...
Yeah. I just feel like...
Not all men is the other one.
Oh, God. But it is always men. But it's not always... Yeah. Anyway, I feel like it's a... Men are, like, teetering on this really tight rope of... Am I allowed to talk to somebody?
Yep.
Am I allowed to make friends? Am I allowed to flirt with?
No.
Do I know, like, 100%, don't fucking tell a woman to smile. Don't wolf whistle at a woman. Yeah. But yeah. If you are both in a bar, I think it's just really difficult for men to now, at the moment, navigate how to do things. What are you saying, Buckers?
Yeah. You think it's difficult for men to speak to women with respect, like they're human beings?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, I knew I'd fucking get it. I'm saying that
I'm going to give it you.
Men don't know how. Yeah.
Why don't they know?
Because they're getting it from all.
They've not grown up in the same world as us.
No, they haven't, and I agree with that. I agree that we've had it really.
I'm like,
It was, wasn't it?
I need to get back in my box and know my place.
I am not for any second saying that men have not had it easy.
I am not saying
for a second that we've not had it hard.
Yeah.
I am just saying at the moment, I think if Emily was here, she'd be coming on it. I think that they are just needing to learn how to do things,
and that's okay.
Yeah,
I think what you're saying, or what I'm understanding from what you're saying, is that men are no longer, or those men who actually want to exist in a society in a respectful way with women and have relationships
are scared to.
Are now no longer able to enjoy the luxury of being able to not think through what they're saying before they say it.
No, I don't think it's even that.
Put a bit more effort into the way that they conduct themselves.
I think people aren't talking because they're scared that they're going to get jumped on.
As in attacked.
Don't talk to me, I'm a female. I don't know.
I think you're both right, because what we try to do with most deeply, deeply complex things that have got systemic foundations going back centuries is simplify, make that, that's the answer. You know, that's what we try and do. It's not, it's really, really nuanced, and lots of things can coexist.
Mm. Yeah.
The case, therefore, that can't, these things all coexist. I think I heard something on a podcast a few months ago, Trevor Noah was talking about it, and the framing of it, I thought, was spot on. That what's happened over the last 70 years or so is women have progressed in many, many, many ways. From really fundamental things, like just getting the vote 100 years ago, to know you suddenly see women in senior positions running countries. Over the last 70 years, women have made a lot of progress. Still nowhere near enough, we all know that. But what they've done is they've moved into spaces that were previously reserved just for men. So women have evolved in that way. What hasn't happened, I don't think, is that men have evolved in the opposite direction. Men haven't gone through the same kind of transformation in order to sort of start to, you know, again, maybe embrace more kind of communal type energies or feminine energies. They haven't done that in the same way. And I think, so for someone like me that's 55 now, been around the block a few times, read a few things, I can be quite comfortable with it, and I can reflect back on my own advantages and privileges without my ego being damaged to go, okay, well, no, I understand that now. It's really hard if you're a young man that hasn't really grown up with that same sense of privilege. If you're a 29-year-old white guy in Melbourne, as one I know and I've had conversations with, and we started talking because he started slagging off my posts, and then I kind of said, well, actually, I'm quite interested in your views. Chat, we did, and he's a lovely guy. And so what he hasn't grown up with the level of privilege that I've had. He has definitely got unearned privilege he's not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to some of the disadvantages he's experienced, you know, and of course, what I realise in terms of do I have male privilege? 100%. Do I have white privilege? Absolutely. But what really enables my privilege to have come to the fore in my life isn't those things fundamentally. It's the fact that when I was younger, I passed 11 plus and went to grammar school. And then when my dad's job moved, I ended up going to quite a posh school where my parents didn't have to pay. So I got suddenly got access to a whole load of opportunities and a sense of achievement around me. I went to uni, I got a job on a grad scheme, and my life was set. I had a completely different life than what my parents had because of the opportunities I had. So it was the social mobility, my socioeconomic background and that privilege that enabled me to leverage the privilege I've got. If you tell a guy from Middlesbrough, who's white and male, in his 40s, working hard for a living, sometimes it can be difficult, has not always had work, lives in a kind of a you know, place in quite a tough part of Middlesbrough, and tell him he's got white male privilege, he'll tell you to fuck off.
Mm. Yeah. I, like, going back to, like, if I meet a guy, I will automatically assume that he's nice. That's just the way I am. I used to not be the same until they give me shit or say something. Or, I mean, fucking hell, me and my mates were at Glastonbury and I literally pulled them up on every single piece of male thing that they did. Yeah. They were like, I was like, let's, the thing is that way. They're like, no, it's not, it's that way. I was like, that's okay. Let's just ignore the woman who knows the dialogue. Like, I was literally on them the whole time. They got so pissed off. And I was like, I'm going to stop now because I can see it's like really, really pissing you off. But can you not even see for a second that like, this is, I'm just telling you what you do to us.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like I haven't eloquented my point. I feel like I haven't got it across. But we've also got 4 minutes till the next person comes in.
Oh, crikey.
We need a part two.
Oh, we need a part two. Can we do that?
Yeah, I'd love to. This is such good fun. I mean, I could do this as often as
I've
you like.
I've got so many questions written down. We just haven't got time. No,
amazing.
Another one then, because I've really loved it.
It's been great.
It's been really good.
Continue that conversation that you were talking about, because I think what you're onto is how do we engage men in these debates? Because, you know, one of the frustrations we have is the world is designed for 50% of the population. And the other 51% actually is that's not mass. The other 51% is excluded and disadvantaged. So we rail against that. But then how do we fix that? We only include the 51% of the population. The other 49%, fuck off, stop being toxic, grow up, learn. So let's continue that the conversation with that thing is something around, I think your point is spot on. How do we unpack that and how do we engage men? Because actually, one of the things about having me on this is maybe that might be something that can help if I can serve a useful purpose as a token white guy.
Oh my God. Jeremy, you're just a bad.
Are you mediocre though, Jeremy? Are you mediocre?
Well, no. I'm fucking awesome now.
Yeah. You're fucking awesome.
I do think there were times when I looked at some of my female peers and thought, you are so fucking good. You're so good. And yet, I'm the one getting the plaudits.
But if you'd have told them that, then you'd have been a creep. Anyway, to be continued.
Yeah, definitely.
No, love to. Please, just let me know when you do, because it's such good fun. Such good fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
That's it for today's episode of Don't Fucking Tell Me What to Wear or How to Run My Business on the WooPod with me, Wendy Gannon. This is more than just a podcast. It's part of Female 5 Million. Head to the link in the show notes to find out more about our movement to empower women. If this episode spoke to you in any way, made you laugh, made you cry, or maybe it inspired you, share it with a friend who needs to hear it. Leave us a rating and a review, and let's keep this movement growing. And while I've got you here, my photography is the way that I fight back against the patriarchy. I empower female founders with the confidence to be themselves in their business, to really enjoy their photo shoot and actually love their photos. So then they can grow their business, increase their prices and get paid what they fucking deserve. If you want to work with me, drop me a message. All the info you need to contact me is in the show notes. Until next time, keep doing you and remember, you are part of something bigger. Bye!